Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will discuss the thyroid and thyroid health with holistic and thyroid medical specialist Dr. Gary Ross, MD, and his wife, health journalist Kathleen Anderson Ross. Dr. Ross is the author of the book Depression and Your Thyroid. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Okay, here's an interesting article that shows that you can protect your thyroid with eating produce. In fact, the highest vegetable consumption is linked to 20% lower cancer risk. Another reason to load up on vegetables is to lower your risk of thyroid cancer. 60,000 new cases of this deadly disease are diagnosed annually, and while a whopping 25 million Americans suffer from various thyroid disorders. Seated right above the collarbone, your thyroid plays a major role in regulating growth, metabolism, and reproduction. Proper thyroid function depends greatly on iodine deficiency during pregnancy, being the most common cause of childhood mental retardation globally. While most Americans get more than enough iodine thanks to the way we eat too much iodized salt, we consume far too fewer vegetables. When Italian researchers looked at two decades of scientific literature searching for how dietary patterns impact thyroid cancer risk, they found that people with the highest vegetable consumption were 20% less likely to develop this particular cancer. What are other dietary tips for maintaining thyroid health? Pick parsley. This breath-freshening garnish is actually a top source of the flavonoid epigenin. Here's another study that shows that seniors who consume the most calories are at higher risk of memory loss. Overeating usually leads to weight gain, and excess weight increases your risk of dementia. But intriguing new research suggests that overeating, regardless of how much you weigh, is linked to later memory loss. Yes, too much food may lead to forgetfulness. According to research just presented at the American Academy of Neurology, the Mayo Clinic compared dietary data from 1,233 seniors ages 70 to 89 with prevalence of mild cognitive impairment. About a third of all participants ate between 600 and 1,525 calories a day, another third between 1,526 and 2,142 calories a day, and the rest ate between 2,143 and 6,000 calories a day. Those in the last highest calorie intake group had doubled the odds of suffering memory problems, even among those at normal weight. Why might this be? Well, one possibility is a high-fat diet. Not only are fatty foods the most caloric dense, they also clog arteries and, by extension, capillaries, which the brain relies on from oxygen. Additionally, simply metabolizing food increases levels of oxidation, so metabolizing as many as 6,000 calories daily would mean a lot more free radicals in your system poised to wreak havoc on brain cells. So what to do with all this information? Well, limit intake of fat, especially saturated fat and trans fats, and fill up on fruit and vegetables, which contain the fewest calories and the most brain-saving nutrients and phytochemicals. We'll be back with more after this quick break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, can a person be too old to build muscle? Is heavy weightlifting a good exercise for someone who is over 60 years old? Well, weightlifting in the context of strength training, also called resistance training, is an important part of an overall fitness program regardless of your age. In fact, research shows that even people in their 90s can improve their strength and walking speed through weight training. An example of this is my good friend Jack Lane, and he continued lifting weights regularly all his life, even until he was 96 years of age. That was the age that he was when he passed away. Now, your question has to do with heavy lifting. Now, heavy lifting is the weight to prevent an individual from completing 8 repetitions of an exercise before the muscle fatigues or before muscle failure. For example, if you are working with a 10-pound weight and could not successfully repeat a movement 8 times, the 10-pound weight would be too heavy for you. And ideally, to build strength, you should be able to do 2 sets of 8 to 10 repetitions with good form before the muscle that you are working out tires or fails. Now, once you can do a couple of sets of 8 easily with perfect form, you generally can handle a bit more weight. Now, Jack Lane always used to advise me to do at least 2 sets of 10 repetitions comfortably, and then from there you can build up or increase the weight from there. If you're new to weightlifting, I urge you to work out with a trainer or a coach if possible, and they can actually help you learn the proper form in order to avoid injury and to perform the exercise properly for the effect that you really want in your muscle building. Now, I encourage you to look for a qualified trainer certified by the American College of Sports Medicine or the National Strength and Conditioning Association. If you can't afford a trainer, you can learn strength training exercises from many books on the subject. And in fact, you can find some of these books. They're available on our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. As long as you learn correct form, age has little to do with the amount of weight you should be able to lift in a program aimed at building muscle and increasing your strength.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Our special guest today is Dr. Gary Ross, MD, and Dr. Gary Ross is in private practice both in San Francisco and Santa Barbara, California, specializing in the treatment of thyroid conditions. His focus is a holistic approach that allows the suffering patient to overcome both the physical and psychological symptoms. We are also joined with Dr. Ross's wife, Kathleen Anderson Ross. Kathleen is a health journalist. She is a natural health advocate, teacher, student, and consultant, working with her husband in his medical practice. Well, welcome to Health and Longevity.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Westerdahl. We're glad to be here.
Yes, we are.
Well, Dr. Ross, you know, as we get into our discussion today, and Kathleen, about the thyroid, let's start off with our discussion with the basics about the thyroid. What is the thyroid gland, and where is it, and what does it do for our bodies?
Well, the thyroid gland is actually a small gland in the front of the neck just below the Adam's apple, and in a normal person, you really can't really feel it very well. Of course, it does, if it becomes swollen, then it becomes goiterous, and it's easier to feel. But the important thing is really what the thyroid gland does. And the thyroid gland's job is to produce thyroid hormone from iodine in the diet. And this thyroid hormone is very important because it controls the body's metabolism.
Well, let's talk about why the thyroid gland is important and some of the things that it actually does.
Well, the metabolism of the body really affects everything. A person with a good metabolism feels good physically and mentally and emotionally. A person with a slow metabolism tends to feel sluggish, sometimes depressed, sometimes cold, sometimes just apathetic, and sometimes even cognitive function can become slower. So as the metabolism is improved up to normal, it's like raising the room temperature in a room. In a warmer room, people are more chatty and they function better. And so the thyroid gland really has this key effect on keeping the metabolism of the body in good shape.
Now, why do people become hypothyroid?
Well, there are many reasons. I'm not sure anybody knows completely all the reasons. Certainly, I've seen in practice over the years that there seems to be a genetic component. Some of our patients will come in and they'll say that their mother and their sisters and two aunts all have low thyroid conditions. So undoubtedly, there must be some genetic component. But there are many other reasons why the thyroid might get sluggish. Stress is a big one, which can affect the thyroid as well as the adrenal glands. And also vitamin deficiencies, iron deficiency, mineral deficiencies, basically a bad diet with perhaps too many sugars or food allergens, all of those things tend to weaken the body's ability to either make thyroid hormone or actually use the thyroid hormone. And I will say, too, that chemicals in the environment, chemicals in the plastics, chemicals in the water, chemicals in the rivers, chemicals in general also have a blocking effect on either the production or utilization of the thyroid hormone.
Well, how is low thyroid actually diagnosed? What are the correct lab testing? I know people, when they want to go to the lab and have that tested.
Well, very commonly, basically, many physicians just simply check a screening test for thyroid hormone, which is called a TSH. And that's good. It's certainly better than nothing. But in an optimal world, if it were affordable and practical, the best way is to check all the blood tests for thyroid hormone, which include testing for T3 and T4, as well as TSH, and also a test that measures thyroid antibodies to see if the thyroid gland is perhaps attacking itself. If all of those blood tests are done and they're all compared carefully, it is a lot easier then to take a look at what appears to be like a subclinical or subtle case of low thyroid. Now, some physicians over the years have also used urine tests, which are not as popular in the United States as they are in Europe, because that involves collecting a 24-hour urine sample for thyroid hormone. And we have done that many times, and we find it useful, again, in borderline cases. The other test that's interesting is the old-fashioned Brodabarn's underarm temperature test, which gives one a bird's eye view of the overall body temperature. And again, if the metabolism is low and the person presents with low thyroid symptoms and their morning temperature is below normal, it all suggests that they have a low thyroid. But the symptoms that go along with low thyroid go on and on. There must be 40 or 50 or more symptoms. But commonly what I've seen in practice is that people with a low thyroid complain of being tired and basically cold. Cold hands, cold feet, sensitive to cold weather. Very often they gain weight, but not always. We've had some patients that have been on the thin side who have still had low thyroid. And in many cases, it seems to correlate, low thyroid seems to correlate with dry skin and recurrent infections. Recurrent infections, sinus infections, skin infections, acne, you know, all sorts of recurrent infections. It makes one think immediately, is there possibly a subtle thyroid deficiency going on. Hair loss is also another common symptom. And some women have problems with menstrual cycles or with fertility or with getting pregnant and really staying pregnant. So low thyroid can affect many, many things.
Now, you mentioned a couple of tests that you look at is T3 and T4. What's really the differences between T3 and T4? Explain that.
Well, the thyroid gland has this unique capability of sucking up the iodine, which it gets from seaweed and other sources of iodine in the diet. And along with a protein, it actually makes, it's the only gland that does this, it makes and produces these two main thyroid hormones, which are called T4 and T3. The T4 has four iodines on it, and the gland mostly does make T4. The T4 goes out into the bloodstream, where it goes to the liver, the kidneys, the heart, the muscles, the brain, and really everywhere. And when it gets there, the body chops off one of those iodine molecules and turns the T4 into T3. The T3 becomes the active molecule that is something like 6 times stronger than its parent compound, T4. The T3 is actually what then penetrates into the cells and turns the cells on and makes the cells warm up and really sweat and really feel good. So the difference between the T4 and T3 is that T3 is the actual active molecule where the rubber really meets the road.
I see. Now, how do you treat a low thyroid condition?
Well, there are many ways to treat a low thyroid. Now, if the thyroid is truly low based on blood tests, urine tests, underarm temperature, and clinical signs and symptoms like we were talking about before, basically the easiest way to make the patient feel better is to give them actual prescription thyroid hormone, because then the results are noticed almost immediately and the patient feels better and they start, you know, functioning better again mentally, depression-wise, physically, cognitively, in all kinds of ways. So the easiest way is to actually prescribe thyroid hormone. Now, thyroid hormone used to be available in the United States for many years, going way back 30, 40 years, as porcine thyroid or armor thyroid, which actually comes from a pig. Apparently, they found that the pig thyroid was very similar to the human thyroid, so doctors in the old days used to prescribe the armor or pig thyroid. Hmm. Now, in the modern world, we also have synthetic forms of T4 and T3, which are not from a pig. Of course, the pigs probably like that. And so we can order specific dosages of Synthroid or Levoxyl or some generic version of pure T4, for example, in a capsule, and pure T3 in a capsule. And when those are swallowed, the patient almost immediately feels better. We've had cases, I can remember one case of a mother who was very lively and she was doing very well on thyroid, and she brought in her daughter who was in high school who was extremely sluggish looking. And we put her daughter on thyroid after doing all the appropriate testing. And the mother called me back about a week later and she said, you know, within even hours of her daughter swallowing the first thyroid pill, she, the mother, could see a certain sparkle in her daughter's eyes that she hadn't seen in years.
Wow.
We've seen many cases like that where the effect of giving real prescription thyroid, whether it's synthetic or whether it's from an animal, the effect is, almost immediate.
So quick results. Now, is it possible to really treat a low thyroid condition naturally without medication?
If the thyroid is a mild case of low thyroid where it's very borderline, not too severe, I have seen cases where people have been able to get their own thyroid gland to work better and get their own cells working better to better absorb the thyroid hormone peripherally by, for instance, changing their diet and testing for and adding in certain vitamins and minerals, especially selenium and zinc and possibly adrenal support. So certainly it is possible to build up the thyroid gland and improve the thyroid system in general with these natural remedies, some of which, you know, contain, as they say, iodine, some contain herbal formulas, some are glandular formulas, but in more severe cases, those things are too slow, and we go back to the prescriptions to sort of get people moving in the right direction immediately.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that and the role diet may make in a difference in healing the thyroid. Any more specifics on that?
Well, in order for the thyroid to work well, certainly there has to be enough iodine on board, and the recommended daily allowance is very minimal. Some people may need more iodine than that. Iodine, of course, as you know, is in seaweed, and it's in multiple vitamins also. But
yes,
in some cultures, people eat a lot of seaweed naturally, many, many more times than the average American. So
Certainly
iodine is important. And enough protein, vegetarian protein, or any form of protein that keeps the body producing the amino acids that the thyroid needs to make the thyroid hormone, because it makes it from an amino acid called tyrosine, and so one is needed and has to have enough protein in order to make that. And of course, a good alkaline diet, cutting down on the sugars and cutting down on the food additives and the preservatives and the artificial things that are, you know, in a lot of food, probably this also would help the thyroid function a lot.
So what else should really be looked at or evaluated or addressed in treating the thyroid in conjunction with some of the different types of testing and treatments?
Well, when I check people for thyroid, I almost always ask them to also check their adrenal function right away, because there is some connection between the thyroid and the adrenals. And especially when people are really tired and have a really clearly low thyroid, I find it helpful to give them some kind of adrenal support to build up the adrenal function. I think of the thyroid as being like the accelerator on the car and the adrenals as being like the oils in the cylinder. And you need enough oil in the cylinders to keep the system running smoothly. So I recommend checking the adrenal function very often with a saliva test, or it could be a blood test, or it could be, again, a 24-hour urine test. And I will say that as we get deeper into looking at the person's overall, you know, health, there are other tests that are like a second tier of evaluation that would include things like a test for iron specifically. Iron seems to be important also in keeping the thyroid system going. And also other vitamins and other minerals. I mentioned selenium before, and zinc, and vitamin D is included in this. And lastly, I would say that food allergies can be a factor. And so in some perplexing cases, we run a blood test for food allergies to look at those, as well as a special test that measures neurotransmitters, neurotransmitters that affect the brain. All of these things go together to affect the thyroid system, which includes, of course, the thyroid gland, but also it includes how those hormones are used peripherally once they get to the liver and the kidney and the muscles and the skin and the brain.
Okay, now I have a book in front of me. It's a book that you've written called Depression and Your Thyroid. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your book and what it entails?
Well, the book has been very helpful, actually, to a lot of patients, and it goes over in more detail what we're just touching on here in this little talk on the radio, and it goes into more detail about the T4 and the T3 and all of the various signs and symptoms of low thyroid and how a low thyroid can in fact cause or contribute to various forms of depression as well as other cognitive difficulties, people with obsessive-compulsive tendencies and other up-and-down tendencies of the brain. So the book goes into this in more detail as a way of helping people, even those that are still on antidepressants but are not really quite really feeling terrific yet.
Now, how can patients work best with their doctors for optimal positive results should they have thyroid conditions?
Well, in a nutshell, it depends on the patient, and it also depends on the doctor. And Kathleen, do you have something to say about that?
First of all, I wanted to say that remember when you go to a doctor, it's not the doctor's fault that you're feeling less than optimal. When you find a doctor who will listen to you, listen to what your thoughts are about your body and how you're feeling, and take it seriously, then true health is teamwork. Be honest with your doctor, be ready to put that advice or any advice into action, and know your health goals, which you should continually revise as you begin to feel better. And sometimes for people, they feel great right away. Other times, it's trial and error, it's fine-tuning to see just what's right because each one of us is unique. So it's important to be patient, persistent, and positive on your path to healing. We're just so happy that you're choosing to look into this subject more deeply. The natural healing process is not only a leap of faith, as you know, Dr. Westerdahl.
That's right.
But a slow, steady march in the direction of well-being for your whole body, for your whole life.
Well, Dr. Ross and Kathleen, thank you so much for being a guest on our program today here on Health and Longevity.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
For more information about Dr. Ross's informative book, Depression and Your Thyroid, go to our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. We'll be back with the final word right after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
That's all for this week. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.